Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's June 19th, 2020. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
So, in all the years I've played poker, I always had this one opponent who gave me the most trouble. She was difficult to read. She tested me, called my bluffs, pushed me to get better. She easily was the toughest player I've ever faced, and we never even played for money. She was a huge fan of our show. The Ante Up OG, I think, is how I refer to her. Yeah. And, of course, she was a huge fan of us, me and you. So if the Ante Up Nation... if you haven't figured it out yet, I'm talking about my mom. Over the years, playing poker with her had provided plenty of fodder for the show. And every once in a while, I'd go to her house, and she'd quote something I said about her on the PokerCast, and just to bust my chops. But she loved it, you know? But her health had deteriorated over the past few years, so much so that I can't even remember the last time we actually played cards. So the Ante Up Nation has one fewer member this week. My mom died peacefully at the age of 79 on Saturday. I was there with her at the end, just me and my wife. So I wanted to thank Scott for coming to the service yesterday. It really meant a lot to me. And I was grateful to have so many great memories with her because of poker. You know, I think about all the times that we laughed so hard. And I think that's the best part about poker, especially for people like us who don't play for a living, and you get to sit around the kitchen table or you know, get together with friends and have home games. It's just the memories and the laughing. So I'll always be grateful that we started poker and I got to play all those games all those years with my mom. So it's been a pretty rough week, but I'm doing good now.
Yeah, good to hear, buddy. It's difficult. You know, we've talked about this. My mother's not in good shape either, and it's definitely been something I think it's binded us together through this time we've been together. So definitely difficult. It was a beautiful eulogy yesterday, though. And
thanks.
It is funny though, because you know, I don't actually know if I ever had the pleasure of meeting your mom. I'm sure I probably did, but all the stories you've told me about her, about listening to the show, and certainly I did get a chuckle yesterday when you mentioned Facebook, because she was always right there to talk about how I'm talking over you on the show. Not giving Chris's due.
But she said it with love.
You did always say it with love, though.
You met her at a baseball game.
That's probably right.
I think that's what it was. I think you met her at the Phillies place.
That's right. Yep.
But, she was always on there and just always happy and always smiling. And, it was tough giving that eulogy, because I wasn't sure if I was going to be okay to do it, but... You know, the minute I got up there, just all the fear and all the anxiety never just left me, and I just read it, and I took my time and had a good time with it. So it's funny, because the church tells you, keep the eulogy to 3 to 5 minutes. And I emailed them back, and I said, we'll see.
Wow. That's bold.
I'm like, really? Keep it to 3 to 5 minutes? My mom's been on this earth for 79 years, I mean, and I got to wrap it up according to your timetable? What do you got to do on a Thursday? That, you know, I was so like, I'm going to write as long as I want to write it. We'll see how it goes.
We'll talk more about that offline, because I am intrigued now. But anyhow, but I'm glad you were not constrained by any artificial minutes in describing someone who
I couldn't believe they said that. But anyway, let's get on to poker.
All right, and what might be exciting news for players in our Papes Poker Series, PokerStars home games are now available on PokerStars mobile app, so players no longer have to be on their laptops or desktops to play. As part of the change, PokerStars eliminated some less popular offerings from home games, but added some new variants. And I have to admit, as much as I keep trying to get on Papes, it just keeps butting heads with the few things that I'm still doing now.
Yeah.
So I have not been able to get back on and played. I looked at the list of games that are available, and I could not tell which ones were eliminated and which ones were added. So I'm sure our Papes fans, particularly Poker Geek, will let us know if some less popular to the overall world but popular to our fan base have been lost, or if they've been added. So. But this is kind of a big deal, I think. I think for a long time people have mentioned to me that they wish they could just play on their phone, and they could play on PokerStars wherever they are allowed to play on PokerStars. They haven't been able to do the home games.
I was leading the charge in that. I think we found out that PokerStars reads their mail. I mean, it was like everyone wants to be able to just like be on their phone when they're on the road, or be on their iPad laying in bed and not have to get out. And not everybody has a desktop. You know what I mean? Not everybody has a desktop, especially in this day and age, or even a laptop, you know? It's like saying you have to play on a hard line, you know? I mean, how many of us got rid of our hard lines for phones? So I'm glad they did that.
AOL.
So this is good news. I think I will play now. I'd have to get online and accumulate some chips like we talk about all the time on the show about how to do it. And they give you like 15,000 chips every few hours. So, I mean, I'm going to get on there and get some chips and try to play these things now. Because every time I think of it, I'm like, do I really want to go get onto my desktop and then try to win some chips? But if I'm just laying in bed one random day and I want to win some chips and then think about the date, oh, it's the 6th. There's a 6th in the day I'm going to play tonight. So this is great news. It really is. I bet you our home games definitely uptick with this. That's good.
Yeah, definitely. I think so. All right, well, it turns out it wasn't just players eager for Las Vegas casinos to reopen. Just days after New York Casino reopened, a man robbed the casino cage of an undisclosed amount of money and got away. However, he later was arrested across the street at MGM Grand Casino and is now facing robbery and burglary charges.
I mean, how... Here's the thing. These people are like walking oxymorons. Because you have to be brilliant to pull off a heist like that somehow, to figure out a way to get out and get away with it, which he did. And then you have to be the stupidest person on the planet to walk across the street to another casino.
That's what really prompted me to put this on here. I mean, New York doesn't have a poker room. MGM's room is closed now, so this really has nothing to do with poker other than the reopening thing. But, you know, we've had our share of fun with robbers over the years here, because you're robbing a place that is just... has more cameras than a camera shop. But then this one just takes it to a whole new level. You somehow were able to successfully complete the robbery, successfully get out of the casino, and then you decided to hide out in another casino.
Across the street.
It just boggles the mind sometimes. So
at least go downtown or something and then go in a casino. That's hilarious.
I mean, really, he got out, hop on a public bus, and go somewhere. Make the trail cold. Oh man, and always our disclaimer: wouldn't we kid around with this stuff? It's obviously not fun to be robbed. So I feel bad for the employees in that. So not making too much. I'm not trying to make too much light of it. I understand the seriousness of it, but wow,
yeah.
Wow.
It's just insane.
No, but here.
Well, you know they're not really in their right mind anyway when they're attempting a robbery. So it's well,
exactly.
You know.
Right. But, yeah, I think we're looking for rational thought and then from an irrational person. Right?
Exactly. So. Exactly.
Well, I'd love to see what his public defender is going to say on this. Good luck, sir.
Well, the Gambling Act of 1902 says that. All right, sorry. 1902. Sorry.
Alright, here's this week's update on casinos and poker room reopenings in New Hampshire. Charitable gaming locations may now reopen with six-handed poker. Locations that Anthony Yep has confirmed have opened are Boston Billiards and Casino, The Brook, Chasers Poker Room, Keene Casino, Lebanon Poker Room, Northwoods Casino, and Manchester Poker Room and Casino. I realized I misspelled something there.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
In Florida, the Big Easy Casino in Hallandale Beach is now open with poker, and the Naples Fort Myers Greyhound track closed for additional cleaning after being open for only 1 week when an employee tested positive for COVID-19. In Iowa, Grand Falls Casino has reopened its poker room. In Nevada, Bellagio, Las Vegas, Caesars Palace, Carson Valley Inn Casino, and Sahara Las Vegas have reopened their poker rooms, and the Venetian has started multi-table shootout tournaments. In California, Commerce Casino, 500 Club Fresno, Golden West Casino, Club One Casino, Hustler Casino, Towers Casino, The Gardens Casino, and Capital Casino have reopened with poker, and Hollywood Park Casino will reopen on Monday. In Maryland, Live Casino has reopened for a top-tier guest and will reopen, including its poker room, for all guests on June 29th. While some poker rooms resume tournaments, Kojak's Poker Club in Midland, Texas appears to be the first to hold a tournament series. Its West Texas Championship Poker Series has begun and will run through June 28th. In Massachusetts, gaming regulators are targeting June 29th as a date for reopening casinos, but poker will not be permitted initially. In the United Kingdom, Genting has announced that three of its casinos will not reopen, and poker rooms in the remaining casinos will be eliminated. And of course, remember, we've started a reopen webpage at antiupmagazine.com/reopen, listing verified details on casino and poker room reopenings. And if you have updates, email us at editor@antiupmagazine.com. And we're also emailing out a weekly e-blast with updates that you can subscribe to on the homepage at antiupmagazine.com.
A couple of things. One, I was glad you read the United Kingdom item because I would have said Genting. I have no idea that it was Genting.
That was
exactly what I was afraid of, and what we're all afraid of, is that these people were saying that their poker rooms are going to be eliminated, you know. And then there was another note today that one of the casinos is keeping their poker room closed, but they're going to use the real estate for slots to help with the social distancing and all that. And I'm like, once you get those slots in there, it's going to be hard to get them out.
Very hard to get them out, yes, absolutely.
One other thing I want to say was I'm very confident in our place in the poker zeitgeist. I have no inferior feelings toward how important we are to the poker world as far as the show or the magazine or anything, but it was really nice last week getting that email from Kevin Mathers. He's a pretty big deal in the poker industry. And so he was thanking us for our reopen webpage. That's got to make you feel good. You know, you started that and been working hard on it. So that was a really big deal. He let us know about something too. So he was actually not only keeping up with us, but then helping us as well. And we, of course, thank all of our listeners and readers and stuff for telling us stuff that we may not know. And, you know, we're all in this together, as they say. So.
Yeah, we've got at least a dozen emails, I think, or Facebook messages or things like that from people that are letting us know updates. And I'll tell you, I mean, as we speak right now, I know the website is not completely up to date because there's more stuff that there's so much stuff that happened yesterday that I just haven't got to. But once we're done with the show, I will be right back at it. But it's things are opening quite quickly now. I usually do a count of poker rooms and I didn't do it, but it is probably close to 100 poker rooms now that have reopened. Which is significant. You know, our magazine is distributed to about 280. So, you know, we're about a third of the way back. Now some of those rooms that we don't distribute to that hopefully we will start. So, it's possible we could come back even bigger than before, through all those, but it will be a long road back in some of these areas. I think you made a good point about the, taking the tables out to social distance slot machines. You know, that's, you know, it was interesting. My wife and I went to dinner last night out, and one of our favorite restaurants. We sat outside, and we were the only ones on the porch. You know, everybody was spaced out. There's only like three other parties there, I think. So it was almost like we were eating at home, but we weren't, right?
Yeah.
And they did a lot of interesting things. They, the waitress didn't no longer came to the table. You ordered at the counter, and then they brought the food to you. And then they had those new, those European style credit card machines where they bring it to the table. Which I love those too. So all that was great. But we were eating on paper plates and plastic with plastic utensils, and our beer was in plastic cups, right? Because that's just how you do things now. When is this going to stop, right? I mean, what's going to be the trigger for our restaurant to go back to using silverware and plates and cups, right? So, you don't know. I mean, and it may not be over, right? So, I don't know. So, to bring it back to the poker here, I think that's the real concern is that, you know, once you take those tables out, you put slot machines in, people get used to not being right on top of each other to play their slots, then maybe that doesn't change ever. Maybe that just is the way it goes forever. And that's difficult for those of us who like poker.
Yeah.
So,
and who rely on it for a living.
A couple other things. I mean, obviously, this COVID test at a poker room is concerning. I mean, we're now starting to see, particularly in our state, a lot of bars and restaurants closing back down after employees or guests have tested for it. So we'll be interested to see how that plays out there. And then Vegas. I didn't really I didn't add this to the show. I should have. But our super fan Chicago Joe. I was trying to figure this out, but he figured it out for me. That Vegas is now allowing you to play six-handed if you have dividers on the tables. Otherwise, five. So in one sense, that doesn't seem very significant, but I think as poker players, we know that step from five-handed to six-handed is a big step, right?
Yeah.
Once you get into six-handed, then I think people feel a little bit more comfortable playing. That five-handed is difficult, and certainly the four-handed that they started with was almost undoable, right? So it's an interesting way of encouraging casinos to put plexiglass dividers. I mean, it's, hey, if you want to have a real poker game, here's how you do it.
Yeah.
And then they end up doing it, right? Which, you know, I'll be interested to see how many more do that. And then, you know, it's really hard on some of these photos to really see with the plexiglass.
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I did watch the video that the Gardens Casino put up. And it was a video, and they took you through it. And that made it a lot easier for me to understand how it looks. And made it seem less obtrusive than I was thinking it might be. Now, of course, I haven't gone to play. I don't know when I'll play again, but so maybe I'll feel a little bit different. But it did not look as intrusive. And then I think we already mentioned this on the show before, too, that it does define your area at the table. I mean, one of the biggest aggravations I get at poker is, you know, space hogs on either side. And then I end up like, you know, I have like 3 square inches for my chips and cards and everything. That's impossible with the plexiglass ladders. You get your own little office there. So, you know, again, it's not the worst thing ever. So
hopefully they've made them adjustable, because if they say, okay, now you're allowed to do 8-handed or 7-handed or something, that they can move them so that they can fit in another seat. Well, and then,
yeah, I mean, I was wondering that too, because one of the casinos, and maybe it was Gardens, it was one of the LA casinos, I know, said that, their max players are 7 or 8, depending on the type of game.
Yeah, I think it was the Gardens. Yeah.
So so that made me start to think about, yeah, I mean, you know, poker tables are very adaptable without the plexiglass dividers, right? You know, I played six-handed tournaments. I played shootouts. I played, you know, heads-up tournaments. But once you put those plexiglass dividers in there, now you're really limited to what you can play. To some degree. So
yeah, you're defining exactly what the game has to be and the spacing. But it looks like a lot of them are just either clamped on or, you know, underneath, or they're like just these tall dividers that stand. I've seen different variations of it. So if it's just a clamp on, kind of like what we do with our rake boxes,
right. Yeah,
then they could just loosen it and slide it. But if it's bolted in or something like that, then they're going to have to make new holes. So it just depends on their system they've used. But it'd be nice to have them adjustable so that they could do that. Yeah, and even if they were getting down to, like, if they wanted to have a heads-up tournament or something, you know, then they can move the dividers out of the way and have them go different ways. And when I see those glass dividers, it reminds me of, like, those TV scenes when people were visiting people in prison.
Yeah. Right.
You know, they got the glass in between them and on the sides. It'd be worth it if you really love to play poker and you want to go. I think it's worth it to play in these places that look like this. So.
Yeah, and I think, I think that's exactly it. If you want to play badly enough, you're going to jump through whatever hoops you need, right? Yeah. So, I'll tell you the other thing, too. I was telling Laura this last night. I mean, yesterday at the church was the longest I've gone wearing a mask. Generally, I don't go out. I don't, you know, if I go to the grocery store, I run in and grab what I need and get out, right? So, So I had my mask on for 5 minutes or something. So that was the longest I had it on, and it was difficult, I thought. Obviously I wanted to be there yesterday. That's a different story. I mean, playing poker is a different thing, right? So I'm not sure whether I'm to the level of wanting to play poker enough to sit there for 3 or 4 hours.
You get used to it. After 2 hours, it becomes like you don't even – I mean, like when my mom was in the hospital on that last day, I was with her for 9 hours with the mask on. You know what I mean? So and eventually you get used to it. And there were other times too, like when we would go visit her and stuff. But it you really want to have a fresh mask when you can afford it, because if you're using like the blue hospital type, you know, the fibers inside start to break down, and so it's not good anyway. But on top of it, you start to feel like you got hair in your mouth all the time and stuff. So you want to get a fresh one. But yeah, you do get used to it after a couple hours. Then it takes a while. In the beginning, it's aggravating, but after a while, you get used to it. But you're right. I mean, if you are aggravated by it at all, you don't want to go play poker. Because if you got to wear a mask and play poker, and this mask is going to aggravate you at all, it's gonna get you off your game, because you're just gonna constantly be like, oh, I want to grab this off and I want to breathe. And so it just depends on your ability to take you know, abuse or whatever. So
to be uncomfortable. So or be uncomfortable until you get comfortable, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
So one last thing. I know we've gone on a little too long, but I thought this was interesting too. I was telling some people. I mean, obviously, I'm spending hours a day reading casino Facebook posts to figure out when they're opening, and you know, and usually they don't come up clearly and say that whether the poker room is open or not, so I have to dig through the comments and wait for somebody to ask, right?
Yeah.
So in doing that, though, I mean, it's been amazing to me the absolute rancor between those who feel that everybody should wear a mask and those people who don't want to wear a mask, right?
Yeah.
And it's really almost like 50-50, which is probably not the numbers that I would normally pick for that. But anyhow, I just feel horrible for businesses, because you can't win with this, right?
Right.
You know, it's probably easier if you're in a place where the government is mandated that you have to wear a mask or you don't have to wear a mask. I don't know if anybody's mandated you don't have to wear a mask, but, because so then you can go with that. But if not, you're left for that decision. And you know whichever decision you're going to go, you're going to anger 50% of your potential customer base, based on what I'm seeing. And that's horrible. For folks that are trying to get back to work, whether you think they need to or not, it's one more minefield that you have to dance around.
Yeah.
It's weird. Weird times we live in.
Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna read through this as fast as I can. Annie updates. Papes, where the Annie Up fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site is available everywhere. Details on how you can join can be found at bit.ly/papes, PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th every month and rotate disciplines, with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. And of course, PokerStars gives you 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Annie Up Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on your hands, or call the floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Annie Up logo designs on merchandise at annieupmagazine.com/shop. Buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of Annie Up Magazine, Annie Up PokerCast, Annie Up Poker Tour logos. If you have a hand of the week, listener spotlight, or call to floor submission, email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com or post in the Annie Up Fans group on Facebook. Each week we spotlight a listener who emails us, and if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with call to floor and hand of the week, we send them something cool. Comes from Lauren. Haven't heard from him in a while. And I really like this email. He says, "So stuck in a state with no online poker, I've been relegated to Stars Play Money until last Saturday." Now he says, "My sister in L.A., but at first I almost read it as my sister-in-law.
Oh.
he says, "My sister in L.A. called me, and she was in a poker game and said I should jump in. It was on PokerNow.club and being hosted by a personal friend of hers. I've seen lots of invites on Facebook to cash games on free sites where you handle the money offline, but I never knew or trusted the people nor the unknown sites. But since this was being hosted by a personal friend of my sister's, I took a chance. It was great. $100 buy-in, Venmo to the host, no rake. I got 1,000 in chips and played 3-6 no limit. So basically it translated to 30 cent, 60 cent. Nice low stakes for an unknown game. Everyone at the table was on Zoom, so we could see each other and talk like we were actually at a home game. I lost two buy-ins, but had a great time. The only problem was it was very much a home game. People kidding around, telling others to call his bluff and whatnot. Stuff like that wouldn't happen in a serious game, but for a home game of low stakes, it was fine. Anyway, it might be a good solution for members of Antiup Nation who are missing their home games. Sounds good, right?
Yeah. So the Zoom thing, I've always known it was just different what sites people play on. So this is a new one that I haven't heard. So, you know, again, it doesn't replicate what we're missing, but it is a suitable replacement, I think. I might find it a little difficult not knowing the folks because you're not – Zoom is different than the game, right? So I don't – you know, putting a name to a face during it – so I don't know how much of a home game it would feel like if I didn't know the folks.
Right.
Whereas, you know, if it was you and me and Faso and Dr. Frank and that, we would, you know. So, but still, it's an interesting way of doing it. And, you know, our little Safety Harbor poker group briefly discussed something similar to this and trying to figure out the – because, like, on Poker Stars, they take – on the home games, they do take a rake in the cash games, home, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
But, so they were trying to figure out how to do it, and then we're all trying to explain to them. I'm like, you know, it's just a calculation at the end of the game. Your money is worthless; it's diluted, but you could do a percentage to figure out how to settle up. But then it got too complicated.
Yeah.
But tournaments would have been so much easier. But so yeah, it's been interesting to see how people have found new ways of doing this. So glad Lauren found one. So
hey, we get to complete O'Malley's move today. Here comes part one, and we'll see you on the other side.
O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are playing four-handed $1, $2 at a reopened Wendover Casino. The atmosphere is strange, somewhat apocalyptic, but poker is poker. Let's play some cards. In this casino, you can buy into this game for up to $500. We've bought in for $400, have been playing for roughly an hour, and are right about at our starting stack. The blinds post, the under the gun folds, and we look down on the button with the 10 of clubs, 8 of clubs. This is a decent hand four-handed, especially on the button. We're going to raise it up. We make it $8 to go, which has become the standard raise at this table. The small blind folds, but the big blind calls. The big blind is an older gentleman, somewhat grumpy, but plays fairly straightforward. He doesn't often step out of line. He sits with around 250. We know this about him because we've seen him here before the pandemic, and know a little bit about his play. There's $15 in the pot, and the flop is the 9 of clubs, 8 of spades, deuce of hearts. This is a pretty decent flop for our hand, but our interest is certainly peaked when our opponent donk bets into us for $10. I could go either way in this position. I could see a thin value raise, possibly making a hand like Jack-10 pay, or potentially getting a weak 9 to think they're beat. I could also see floating and seeing what happens on the turn. We choose the latter. There's roughly $35 in the pot, and the turn is the 8 of hearts. This is a great card for our hand. We now are ahead of any 9, other than 9-8. The big blind slows down and checks. I think this is a value situation here. We toss 5 red chips into the pot, $25. Our opponent quickly calls. With roughly $85 in the pot, the river is the ace of spades. Our opponent now bets, this time $50. So, is this a raise or a call? What's the move?
This really seems to me to be a big ace who tried to define our hand on the flop and improved on the river. Our downside here is minimized by our opponent's much smaller stack, so I'm going to raise it up to $100.
Yeah, I'm probably raising to like 150. It feels like he has aces up with a decent kicker, so I don't know. It just feels like we're ahead, and I'm not going to settle for his bet. So let's me and you raise. Here comes part two.
Hello again. This bet leaves our opponent with just a little more than 150 left. So, if we're going to raise, I think it needs to be a shove. He's a pretty tight player, but I think it's possible he's completely missed that this is a paired board. There's no draws that got there. This bet is a little confusing. He just called our preflop raise, so we can eliminate most pairs, aces through tens. He led the flop. Could this be ace-9? On the turn, he checked and called quickly. Maybe he has something like 10-9 of hearts or jack-10 of hearts. Why the bet on the river? Was he calling me with something like ace-queen or ace-jack of hearts? Based on his range and his check on the turn, I think we are way ahead of most of the hands he can show up with here. It's value time. We announce all in and he snap calls. We have a sense of slight panic as he quickly turns over the ace of hearts, 9 of hearts. We show our trips and he storms away from the table. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, what do you make of this one? And be careful when returning to the tables. I hope to see you on the felt.
All right, first, I wasn't paying attention to stack sizes, so the shove was the right move. Our opponent was definitely stronger than we thought, but if you look back, he was doing that old checking for pot control move on the turn. It just ended up backfiring on him.
Yeah, I was happy we put him on pretty much the right hand and that we were called, but it could have been anything. You know, you just never know with these four-handed, you know what I mean? You just never know what kind of hand it is, because you're thinking, oh, four-handed, he could be playing anything. But at the same time, they could still be dealt good hands. You know, they could still be right. Dealt ace-eight there, and we're screwed. So, very good, though. Always happy when he wins.
All right, it's time for the advanced pokertraining.com hand of the week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. If you have won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. Good friend John Van Ottenbacher's back.
Yes.
And, I should pause to say that we, our begging and pleading worked, and we are flush with all kinds of fantastic hands for quite a while now.
Nice. But,
still keep sending them in.
Yeah, don't stop.
But anyhow, so you're going to hear from some folks in the coming shows that you haven't heard from in a while, which is going to be interesting. But John Van was the top of the list, so here we go. He says, we are down to 5 players in an online tournament. Blinds are 400 and 800 with a 100 ante. He says, I have around 32,000 in chips, which is about 40 big blinds. I'm in the small blind with the ace 8 of diamonds. The other gun folds. The cutoff raises to 2,400. The button folds, and it's on us.
Well, he said we're down to 5, right? So, I mean, it could be anything. We just talked about this a moment ago where, you know, when it's shorthanded like that, they could be playing any types of hands. So there is a little part of me that says, I don't believe this guy and I want to come over the top. There's a little part of me that wants to call and just hope we hit it good. And there's a little part of me that wants to fold. So it really just comes down to feel. And, you know, there's a flow to a tournament too. And you get an idea of, if I'm going to fold here, will I still, given the way they're playing, will I still make the money, or, you know, whatever it is. So to me, I think I would take in all of the information I have. For me, all I have are blinds and antes and stack size. That's it. So it's tough for me to just be like, you know, here's the right move. I guess I would probably call and hope I flop really good. If I don't flop really good, I'm just going to check fold. I'll take a flyer, like Scott likes to say. I got enough chips to take this one little raise, because I'm in for 4, and then there's a bunch of money out there. So for 2 grand, and I've got 32 grand, I'll have 30 if this hand's over, if I just fold after the flop. So that's plenty of money. So I don't mind taking a flyer here. Like I said, if I just thought for 1 second that this guy was getting out of line, I might consider re-raising and taking down a nice little chunk of change right there. But he, of course, I just mentioned with O'Malley that you just don't know. You assume because it's shorthand they're playing lesser hands. But at the same time, he could still wake up with a bigger hand. Then you've wasted, you know, 7 or 8 grand. So I think with a suited ace, a decent ace, not a great ace, but a decent one, shorthanded is not bad. I'll probably just call and hope we hit it pretty decently.
Yeah, and I just realized I didn't give you all the information, so let me give you a little bit more and see if it changes anything. But he said the cutoff, who's the person that made the raise, is the chip leader with a little more than 100,000 in chips, which is more than 100 big blinds,
yeah,
and has been very aggressive.
Okay.
Another player has around 50,000 chips, and 2 others have around 20,000. So Jonathan is in the middle of the stack sizes.
Okay. Well, we could be eliminated by this guy, too, so that's more caution, right? You could be eliminated by this guy, so you want to be a little careful.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's I think that's the reason I realized I probably should have mentioned that, because that does play a factor in the decision here, I think. So I'm generally right there with you on this. I mean, five-handed, any aces becomes a good hand. And it's suited, of course, which always helps. The two problems for me are, one, we're in the small blind, so we're going to be out of position the entire hand, which is difficult. And then two, now with this new information that we have, that the person who raised is the chip leader and can knock us out of this tournament. I'm a little wary of going down the road against that kind of player out of position with a hand that's bigger five-handed than it is nine-handed, but it's still not super huge, right? So.
Yeah.
I think considering all that, I'm probably going to fold here. It's probably a little tight. But, you know, I just don't like to tangle with the chip leader unless I have the goods or position. And right. They're one of those things right now.
Right.
So.
Plus the fact that he's very aggressive that you mentioned now makes it even harder for us to deal with this guy out of position. You know, if it's one thing if he was like, hey, he only does this with big cards and all that, then you kind of look at the flop and be like, all right, I think I'm ahead. But now, this, if he's very aggressive, that generally means he plays any cards. And now you may be ahead, you may not be ahead before we go to the flop. And then at the top of it, you know, any flop that comes down, you can't just say, oh, that's probably hit him. You have no idea. So I hate being in these situations.
Yeah, and on top of that, he's probably going to when you're described as very aggressive, you're not just very aggressive pre-flop. You're very aggressive throughout the whole hand.
Right.
So he is going to put us to a test through a flop to turn in the river here. So if we don't flop big, it's going to be very difficult to navigate that, I think. So, and again, we're right at 40 big blinds. That's somewhat comfortable, but you know, a couple big bets in a hand like this, and now you're down to 20 or 15.
Yeah, you're down to shove mode.
That changes the entire complexity of the tournament for you now, right?
Yeah,
so, so again, it's probably a little tight, but there's a couple warning signs here that I'm not going to ignore, and I would just rather fold here. Different story if I had been raised and I'm just completing the big blind, but.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind, I don't mind a call because it's not that big of a raise. It's not that big of a portion of the stack we have. So, again, if I'm disciplined enough to see a flop and be realistic about it, that I've hit it well enough to continue or I haven't, then it's like, okay, I can take a flyer here. But if I'm not, or if I'm the type of player that really needs to have position or the fact that this guy is really aggressive, I can see folding. And if I'm the type of person that, you know, gets in over my head after flops because I see I'm playing Omaha and I see a hint of anything. You can see the world when you play Omaha and you see a flop. You can always imagine something.
Right.
So if I'm that type of player and hold them too, I might be trying to be disciplined enough to fold. So I'm going to take a flyer and call though.
I think the other thing too, once we get down, again, I used to love playing sit and go. So that's where I used to do pretty well.
Yeah.
And we are really in a sit-and-go situation now, right? So I'm making decisions based more on stack sizes around. So I have never been scared of letting one player at the table take everybody out and then going up with them head-to-head because it only takes a couple hands to change that fortune, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, you know, we got a couple of players that are down to 20,000 here. You know, I'm comfortable letting this guy kind of run over the table because I can imagine that's what people are saying. It's like, hey, Scott, you're folding, you're playing too tight, you're going to let this guy continue to accumulate chips. At this point, I really don't care if this guy accumulates chips as long as he's knocking people out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'll let him do all the hard work and then I will, you know, try to outplay him heads up and get those chips back. So that kind of plays into my decision as well, too. So,
All right.
Our hero calls and the big blind folds. So pot is 6,100, and we see a flop of 10 of diamonds, 9 of hearts, tray of hearts, and we are first to act with our ace 8 of diamonds.
Yeah, this is a miss for me. I mean, there's nothing here except backdoor outs. And on top of it, even if we hit the ace, we still don't know if it's good if we hit it on the turn. I can't imagine betting this guy off his hand if he's an aggressive person, took the lead, and we only called. You know, if you do a donk bet, he may just come over the top. And again, this guy can knock you out. And why be crippled? Why be so cavalier and bet out and then be crippled because of it? So I, like I said before the thing, I said, I'll take a flyer. I better be smart about how I hit it. And if I'm not, it could cost me. So in this case, I see backdoor straights, backdoor diamonds, and one over card. I don't see myself betting out, and I certainly don't see me calling if this guy makes a decent bet. So I'm checking.
And he's going to make a decent bet, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is, yeah, we've reached the end of this hand. So,
check
for me, I think. Yep. So, all right, our hero does check. The opponent bets $2,500, and it's back to us.
Yeah, well we know our answer.
And, of course, we know that's not going to be
right.
So our hero calls. He says, I have a backdoor straight, a backdoor flush, and an overcard, but no hearts. I have a pretty weak hand, but the bet is fairly small, barely larger than his pre-flop raise. I decided if I pick up a straight or flush draw, a diamond, queen, and jack, seven or six, I could check raise the turn, as I feel this player is being overly aggressive with his big stack. Well, one of the things I told Jonathan here is now this is kind of the trap you get in, right? So what you're hoping for on the next card is a card that gives you a draw.
Yeah.
Which means you're going to have to get to the river to get payoff on this hand, which means you're going to have to invest a lot of chips to get somewhere where you may not be able to work. Now, obviously, I think he's talking about check raising and playing back this player and trying to win without actually making his hand, so I understand that. But if he does play back at us, then we're back relegated to actually hitting a hand on the river. And we've committed a monster percentage of our stack here in an all-around bad situation, I think. So
yeah.
All right, pot is 11,100. The turn is the ace of spades. So the board now is 10 of diamonds, 9 of hearts, tray of hearts, ace of spades, and we are first to act again.
Well, if I'm going on his mindset, if I remember what you said correctly, he said if I pick up a draw that he could check raise, but he didn't say anything about if he hits the ace. But he did say the ace was one of his, you know, outs, whatever. He said an overcard earlier. So, you know, he hits the ace. So now I'm curious. I don't know in his mindset what he was thinking if he hit the ace. So I don't know. Again, this guy could have had an ace, could have had a better ace than us. That's why he raised. Not just because he's aggressive, but maybe he actually has the better ace. And he did what a better ace would do on the flop. You know, if he had ace 10, he hit his 10, he betted. If he had ace jack and missed, he still c-bet. And all we did was call, so we don't have any more information from this guy, which is what we should have done anyway. I don't think we should have raised. So is it now you wake up? Or is it now you try your check raise? I don't know. It's nice that we hit the ace, but again, this can only mean bad things for us because it's hand of the week. So I don't know what's going to happen. But if it were me, I still would check. And then I would see how much he bets and then figure it out. If he checks behind, then I know I'm good. If he bets it, then I'll have to gauge how much he's betting and whether or not it's worth me putting more money in. But I think aces with an eight kicker five-handed might be pretty good. It just depends on if he had a better kicker and raised earlier with an ace. So again, it gets back to feel. It's hard to do it in black and white like this. You know, I'm looking at my notes and it's like, yeah, the guy's aggressive. He wasn't exactly on the button, so it wasn't that he was stealing. You know, it was the cutoff, but you're five-handed, that could be, you know, it could be any two cards. So I think I would probably check and then probably call and probably just try to keep the pot small, going to the river and getting value. I just don't see this being a case for me to raise. I mean, that's the one thing, is if you believe he doesn't have anything or that he could be drawing, then this is where you either bet out or check raise a bunch.
Yeah, but you have to at that point if that's what you've decided, right?
If that's what you believe, yeah, exactly.
The pot is getting too big now. So it's the pot's at 11,000. I believe we're now down to about 27-ish. A little bit less than 27.
Yeah.
So, you know, any kind of bet that's going to come here is now going to get us into a weird zone where if we call that, you know, our the river has got to be our shove at that point, right? So if that's the case and we feel we're stronger right now, we should be doing that right now, probably in a check raise rather than a bet out. But that's what you have to decide. You have to decide, is this ace a good card for us? I mean, obviously our hand improved, but did it improve more than our opponent? So Again, this is, I mean, we started down this road at the beginning that often leads to these problems. So at this point, the other three players at the table are watching this hand with glee, I think. Right?
Yeah.
So, I guess you got to decide. I mean, I'm a little scared that I improved here, I think. So, but.
Yeah, you're either putting your tournament life on the line here, or you're going to be doing it now. And this is the problem with playing this hand in this position. So, I got to get a read on this guy. If I think that he might be drawing, I'm going to... I don't know. If I think he's drawing, I might bet out cost. Because if he's drawing, he might check behind now and got that free card. And that's going to suck. Yeah. You know, there's hearts, there's straights. So, I really think... It goes back to feel. So it's hard for me to say. Given the information I have here, I'm probably going to check call.
Yeah, because here's the other from, you're right. So if we bet out here, we've committed our stack now. I mean, if we bet out and he calls, we have to bet the river.
Yeah.
It is, and the river could be something not exciting, like a heart, right? Or a card that completes another straight that doesn't help us. So, but if we check and he checks behind and he is drawing, then we've given that free card. So, I mean, ideally, our goal here is to check raise, but that's only going to work if he bets. So, now being an aggressive player, he probably is. So that's probably a good gamble to take. But wow, this is a tough spot. Now. Yeah. I will say, you know, I keep talking about being worried about being eliminated. The other way you have to look at this, too, is if we get it all in and win this hand, we are now the chip leader, and that's a pretty powerful position to be in five-handed. So there is an upside, a tremendous upside to winning this pot. So
it also depends on how many spots they were paying. I have no idea. How do I know if it was an online tournament? Could have been 50, 60, 100 players in this, and you're already guaranteed a payday, so you might be willing to take a chance to jump to the top three.
Huge difference,
So we don't know how much is being paid. It could be top three spots, and you're going to, why risk it now when you were guaranteed third if you just sat there and folded your way to third? So a lot of stuff comes into play when you're making your decisions here.
Absolutely. All right, our hero checks, and his opponent bets 7,000 and is back on us.
7,000. That's, the pot was 11. So that's like, man, that's way more than half. 7,000 we have. So we'd have like 20,000 left. So, oof. I mean, originally we had 32 and had about 40 big blinds. So now you're taking a third of that. So you're looking at 25, 28 big blinds. I mean, I guess still, if you were to call now and then he shoved on the river and you could fold, you still have a decent amount of blinds, but you're getting around shove mode. Geez, I really don't know. I guess we're getting into trouble here, but I would probably call. I don't think I can fold with hitting my ace now. I mean, I just don't think I can fold. If I shoved, that would be interesting. You know,
I think that's the play. I think you're right. This point we've got this far in the hand that we've invested so many chips that we have to roll the dice and get paid off here. So
just that, but you got to get not to interrupt, but also you have enough of a stack now to make it tough for him to, you can get him to fold a better hand right now. Probably, that's a big enough bet still to make him ponder, you know, whereas if you just call and then at the end he bets 14, now you know what I mean, you're not going to get in the fold or whatever your play might be down the road or whatever. So you're right, I think the shove is the right thing.
He has no read on us, right? We've been passive through this entire hand, right?
Yeah,
so the check raise is super powerful here because of that, because now we're saying hey, we've had a hand the entire time. And I think you're right. Now, I mean, obviously if he has an ace, he's going to call. And we're going to hope that it's a weaker ace than we have. But, of course, he can have some other hands that beat us as well, too. But if not, then this is – I'm not a big fan of check raise. But if I'm going to check raise, this is the exact spot I'm going to do it in.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
To me, that's the – I think it's the only play here. Folding is too weak now that we've improved. And the call is just going to be put us in that spot where we're going to have to – like I said before, we're going to have to bet the river, whatever it is, and if it ends up being a trouble card, that's going to be difficult. So, If he's on a draw right now, this is our chance to make him pay for it. Yeah. Or the full. Yeah. Either way, I'm going to be happy with that, you know.
Yeah, okay. let's check raise.
Okay, let's see. Our hero calls. He says, I hit my ace, but if he has a larger ace, I'm in trouble, although I don't think I can fold to this particular player yet. Pot is 25,100. The river is the 8 of hearts. Final four is 10 of diamonds, 9 of hearts, tray of hearts, ace of spades, 8 of hearts.
Ugh.
Of course, it's on us first with the flush now out there.
Yeah, flush and straight. 9-10 got there now, you know. And so did 4-5. But it's possible that he has these hands, you know. He could have... he could have backdoored into a flush. He could have... Or not even backdoored, right? There were 2 hearts, right, on the flop?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, he could have been just saying, you know what, I got a pair, and I'm... I think a straight gets there, right? Does a straight get there now? Wait a minute, hold on. I'm sorry, what did I say?
Yeah, there's 8-9-10.
8-9-10. Okay, I'm sorry. So queen jack gets there.
Yeah, queen or I'm sorry. 6-7.
I was right, and I looked at the word numbers wrong here. Okay, so yeah, so straight gets there, hearts get there, and now we've made aces up, so it's going to be aces up, right? 8-8. Yeah, so it's going to be tough to fold, but it's the worst card possible. It completes 2 draws, and man, I don't know. Here's the deal is, do I think I can fold? Like, if I check and he shoves, and I have basically 20 grand, can I fold here with aces up? I don't think I can, so I might as well shove.
So you have to shove, right? I think that's the only play now. I mean, I think we've got to this point. We've actually improved on the last 2 cards. The board has gotten scary, of course. We need to represent that we have a bigger hand than we have here and hope that, based on what we have left in our stack, that it gets him to fold. There's no other way around this. I think if we check, he's going to bet and we're at the call, and then we lose the ability of getting him to fold out a slightly better hand than we have. So,
right.
You know, we've gotten this far, and again, I keep harping on it, but this is, we went down this road from the beginning where I probably wouldn't have gotten into all of this hand. And here we are, and so we need to be bold here, and we need to be confident that that our hand is best, or our bet will be enough to fold out that slightly better hand. So we got to shove here.
Yeah, I think you have to.
We are now. So
yeah, it's the only, basically the only bullet you have left in your gun is to shove now, because after that you're guessing, and of course if he got there he's not folding, and we're screwed anyway.
Exactly, right? So, but I mean, if we check and he bets, then with the whatever he has, then we have to call at this point. Yeah. I think I don't think we can fold at this point with 20,000 left, you know.
Yeah,
don't think so. So I mean, we gotta show him. So
hopefully he's in the money.
All right, our hero checks and our opponent shoves. Of course, you know, obviously he had us covered. So if we call, it would be all of our chips.
We talked about it, right? We're going to call.
Yeah, exactly what our hero does. He calls, and the opponent shows the 7 of hearts, 6 of hearts.
Oh.
The river flush, not to mention he also gets the straight there at the same time. Nothing meant. Because I made 2 pairs, and now I'm beating most ace-x hands. He was betting and other single pairs, but I think it might still be too weak to call with. Shouldn't he have been worried? I now could have a straight or flush and check back most of the one. 1 or 2 pair hands on this river, meaning I should fold, or does his overaggression as the big stack warrant a call with his middling 2 pair hand?
The hardest part for me is that to put him on that hand. I mean, not that you can't put him on that hand, given the aggressiveness, the chip leader, the shorthanded, you could put him on suited connectors. It's possible. And the way he played it, if you go back real quick, you look at 10-9-3, 2 hearts, well, then there you go. He's playing it like he had all the world, and he did. You know, I mean, he flopped an inside straight draw, a flush draw, plus he had control of the hand, and he was chip leader in a shorthanded game, and you kept playing passively. So he kept feeling confident that he could either get you off the hand or he's going to hit his draw. So he had all these semi-outs, too. So when we just kept calling, we kept letting him put the price on. So when the ace of spades came and you checked, he's just like, oh, I'm going to keep the pedal to the metal because you've shown me no strength. At that point, I don't know if we get him off the hand or not. It's a lot of outs with 1 card to come, and he's still chip leader. But at that point, if we had done the check, raise, shove, maybe he lets it go. Maybe. Because it is just a gutter.
After that point, because now he's on a... I mean, his straight draw is pretty weak. He has to hit that 8. But he might feel a little bit better about his flush draw at that point. But at that point, we would have made him have to pay $20,000. When there's an ace, which is what helped us, and he has to think that's what helped us, right? So he knows that, you know, a 6 or 7 is not going to help him. So he's going to have to hit the hearts.
Right.
Or that 8. So maybe he calls. I mean, he had a lot more chips than we did. So, I mean, at that point, that's when you use your chip stack to really accumulate chips, right? So he probably still would have called. And so nothing would have changed, but I would have liked to seen that decision versus the decision that he put us to.
Yeah. And there's nothing to say that he doesn't know that, like, he had two baby hearts, but his hearts might not have been good. If you put him in that pressure, he might think, oh, you might be shoving with ace 10 of hearts. You know what I mean? You got the 10 of hearts top pair and you're just letting walk the dog. And then boom, now you're like, hey, on the turn, I check raise you, 'cause I've got top pair, top kicker, and the nut flush draw, and now I can put you to a test, and I think you can't fold. So he might put that into his head too. There's a lot of psychological crap that goes on too. It's this, you know, the upper levels of the game. So it just depends on how you read on the guy. But I agree. I think on the turn is where you might get him to lay this down. Not that you need him to or wanted him to at the time, because we're not being hindsight here. We're just saying if you had played it the way we thought, you might have survived this hand. You know, at the time, you hit the top pair and you were ahead, but only statistically, minimally.
Yeah, really, really, really would have liked to have seen his reaction on our check raise shove on the turn there with that ace of spades there with him sitting on 7 high with a flush draw. So, had we got him to fold that down at that point, we would have picked up 18,000. So, you know.
And he would have come down that much.
Exactly. So.
Would have tightened up the race.
We would have been in a much better spot there, obviously, than dead as we are now.
Well, hopefully he actually cashed. You know, hopefully he was already in the money, and that was just a lesson. But yeah, he made the show again, Jonathan. So we start calling him. I was thinking about, you know, people are supplying multiple hands now. You know. And I was thinking we'd call people like Vic Jr. on the show.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, he's like the NG Vic Jr.
Okay, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Locke.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.